Yvonne, wow, you've got quite a story, and it all happened out in Portugal. Just take us back to what happened, Yvonne.
We were on a bus tour last Tuesday, and we were up in the mountains. And then on the way back down again, all the coaches all stopped at like a communal restaurant, and we were in there for lunch. And we were all just sitting eating our lunch, and the man directly opposite, Seamus, sort of, well, we heard a thud first of all, but because the restaurant was so busy, he really didn't pay attention to the thud. And then Seamus noticed the man had slumped over the table. So he said to me, there's something wrong with that wee man. So obviously you just automatically go, I went over to him and he was unresponsive. And he was at that stage breathing and he did have a pulse. But I was by myself. So another lady sitting close by said, what do we do? So I explained that I was a nurse, so we need to get him into the recovery procession. So we got him down onto the floor and got him into the recovery procession. And then he regained consciousness and he was actually speaking to me. And was alert, and he told me that he had nothing like this before, that he had fainted previously, and he was on medication for high blood pressure. And then instantly he started to like snort breathing, and then by this stage another wee young girl came as well, and she said she was also a nurse. And then within sort of maybe 2 to 3 minutes, the man's, he had no pulse, and he wasn't breathing, so he was clinically dead. So we just had to start a CPR on him. So the other wee girl done the chest compressions and I done the rescue breaths. And after 2-3 attempts of that, we got the man breathing again.
And, I mean, you were dealing with this situation. Were the emergency services on their way, the Portuguese emergency services, as you were doing all this?
Well, they were called, but because we were up the mountains, we were sort of out of, you know, quite a distance away. So it took them, I'm sure, a good 20 minutes to half an hour before they reached us. When they did reach us then, they had absolutely nothing with them. They had no defib, they had no ECG, they had no drugs. So basically they were like a taxi service. And clearly they didn't understand any of our English very well when we tried to tell them what had happened to the gentleman. They couldn't communicate, but there was the tour rep on one of the coach buses, she had to interpret for us what exactly we had done and what had happened to the gentleman.
Meanwhile, as that was happening, you were continuing to save this man's life, this, I believe, 70-year-old. Take us back to that narrative, because he was still hovering between life and death.
Oh, he was certainly was hovering between life and death. He had no pulse and he wasn't breathing. But with the CPR, we did get him breathing again. Now, his pulse was still really, really, really quite weak. And his breath was very shallow. And like, he was still a very ill man. And we just kept hoping that these emergency services would come. And like in a hospital setting, it's obviously very different. Like the cardiac arrest team is here within seconds. And then they sort of take over. But in that situation, when the ambulance came, they clearly weren't paramedics. They weren't medically, you know. So we, myself and the other young nurse, had to continue. And then when he sort of was regaining consciousness, he was very restless and agitated and obviously very shook up and very distressed.
Dare I say, you had a much greater handle on it than these emergency workers, didn't you seem to?
Yeah, well, we really had to take control. And even when they did come, they did have a cuff to do his blood pressure, but they just left us to get on with it. And they had an oxygen cylinder, but again, they handed us the oxygen mask to sort of put that onto the gentleman. And like they just sort of stood back, and myself and the other girl, who I don't honestly know where she was from, but other than she was in the south of Ireland, but we were the two that was left to deal with it.
So how long were you and the girl from the Republic holding the situation until an ambulance arrived, and sort of what happened next?
Well, we were clearly holding the situation for a good 20 minutes to 30 minutes. Then when they did come, they tried to get the gentleman onto the trolley, but they had absolutely no technique for lifting. So between myself and the other girl and a couple of, you know, onlookers, we got the man up onto the trolley and sort of tried to reassure him and stay with him. But now his pulse was extremely weak at that stage, and his breathing, like his oxygen levels, was very, very low. He was still very cyanosed. But they got him into the back of the ambulance and they headed off to a hospital with him.
And were you kind of thinking, as this was going along, what else is going on with this man that we might ascertain how to keep him alive until he gets to hospital? Were there any other kind of health indicators?
No, none whatsoever. Because his wife now was with him and somebody else asked his wife, had he any problems with this before? And she said, no, definitely not. So this was all very new to him, and like, it was obvious that it was, you know, his heart was really quite badly damaged from this because his pulse was so weak.
But it feels like an episode of 24, this, like it's happening in real time. Half an hour later, the ambulance arrived. Did you accompany the ambulance? Were you in it to the hospital? It seems like you would have been very useful to be there. Were you in the ambulance?
No, we weren't allowed to go in the ambulance. The ambulance, that's apparently a rule in Portugal, that nobody can travel in the ambulance with the patient. So the tour operator in the bus had to organise for his wee wife to get a taxi to follow the ambulance to the hospital. And I had to, unfortunately, get on my coach to get back to where I was staying at.
And I believe this man is recovering. So how did you kind of keep tabs on him and, I understand, keep it kind of up to date with their family and all that?
Well, because the wee wife was on her own, another lady said she would accompany her to the hospital. They had just met that morning and they were staying in the same hotel. So she asked me, could she have my name and number? And I said, certainly. And I said, you know, she said she would send me a message. But clearly we didn't honestly think the man was going to make it. He was very ill now. And to me, he needed an awful lot of like cardiac drugs that he would have got if it had happened in a hospital setting. So that lady took my name and number. And then she texted me later on to say the gentleman had been transferred to a bigger hospital in Portugal and that he was in intensive care. That was on the Tuesday. And then on the Wednesday, she texted me again to say that he was still in intensive care and his two sons was flying out to Portugal to be with him and the wife. And I came home on Thursday, which was the 8th of June, and about 8 o'clock on Thursday night, my phone rang and it was a gentleman himself phoned me.
Wow. So how was he by that stage?
He said he was fine. Now, he was very shook up by it all and he was very tired. But he said that whenever they got him to the hospital, they had done surgery. He didn't elaborate on that, and I didn't want to sort of question him too much. But he said, thanks to me, he was able to celebrate his 70th birthday. And thanks to me, he would be able to celebrate his 50th wedding anniversary.
Oh, wow. This is all happening at the same time.
Yeah.
What a present from Northern Ireland you gave him.
Well, I suppose I gave him life back again, yes.
And as we understand, this man is recovering. Had he a coronary history, or did this come out of the blue? Did you get that?
No, he had no history at all. This was totally something out of the blue. Totally something completely new to him. He did have high blood pressure, apparently, and he was on medication for that, but that was well controlled. But he had no cardiac history whatsoever.
Wow. Now, I mean, I suppose being a nurse with the Trust, the NHS, you have a duty of care, obviously, during your working time. But outside of that, you went beyond the call of duty. I suppose that's just instinctive, Yvonne.
Okay, it is instinctive. Like, obviously, the man was in desperate need. He was clearly dying. He actually, as I say, he had died. Like, there was no breath and there was no pulse for a good 2 minutes, possibly, before we did get him, you know. And thankfully, the CPR was successful, which isn't always successful either. Even in a hospital setting, it's not always successful in getting somebody resuscitated.
But you must draw a lot of satisfaction from the fact that a lot of these procedures that are in place over here, like defibrillators and all, which make outcomes like this a lot easier, they weren't there. So you were tested at full tilt. But thankfully, and thank God, it came through.
Thank God, yes, thankfully. At the time, you don't think. You just sort of want to, like, autopilot, and the adrenaline obviously kicks in, and you just do what you've been taught to do over the years. And then afterwards, you sort of, later on, you sort of think, oh gosh, you know, this is real life. You know, what sort of, this has happened.
Do you know this man's name?
His name is Robin Chambers, and he was actually able to fly home to the UK on Sunday evening.
And are you keeping in contact with the Chambers family? Or I suppose you don't want to be too intrusive, but you get the odd text every so often.
Well, his son texted me then over the weekend, basically thanking me for saving his dad's life. And then I asked him, when was his dad's 70th birthday? So it's actually next week. So I'm going to send him a birthday card just to sort of mark the event that he's clearly been able to see.
Fantastic.